to The Divine Breadcrumb with your hosts, Carol Campos and Deb Sorensen. Carol and Deb have always believed the universe helps people on their path by sending signs, clues, or what they call divine breadcrumbs. A divine breadcrumb can create both small and massive shifts in a person's life. On this podcast, Carol and Deb will speak with authors, healers, entrepreneurs, and other amazing people across the globe to discuss these pivotal moments. So get ready to learn, to love, and to laugh. And remember, the universe always provides if you allow it to. Enjoy the show.
Hi, it's Carol, co-host of The Divine Breadcrumb. This episode is brought to you by Carol L. Campos Coaching. Why coach with me when there are so many coaches out there? I do things differently. I don't jump right into your goal. Why? Well, what I've learned is that the subconscious mind is running 90% of the show. That's where we start. We clear any emotional blocks and limiting beliefs first, making sure you know your why and are aligned with where you're headed before tackling your goal. Whether you want to change careers or simply want more joy in your life, I can teach you strategies to help you gain the clarity needed to go where your heart is calling. To get started, I invite you to sign up for a free discovery session at carollcampos.com. Together, let's light your path. Hey, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Carol.
This is Deb. Welcome back to The Divine Breadcrumb.
Today, we're excited to be talking with Elaine Best, the host of Angus IT. And if you say that fast, you'll say that it's a really clever way of saying anxiety. And Elaine describes it as a comedy mental health podcast. So to say that Elaine is open about living with anxiety is an understatement. She gives you the good, the bad, and the ugly, but she does it in a way that doesn't make the listener uncomfortable. In fact, she uses humor to teach people what it's like to live with anxiety and some of the stigmas surrounding mental health issues. And when Deb and I went to the She Podcast convention last October, that first night we headed over to the cocktail party, welcoming everyone, and Elaine was the first person we met. And what struck me was Elaine's confidence. So when she explained that her podcast was about anxiety, I mean, we were floored. You know, here I was introverted and awkward, and Elaine was basically owning the room. And then once we listened to some episodes, we were further impressed. Not only is she one smart woman, but she's hilarious. So we'll be sure to put all her info in the show notes so you can start listening as well. But today we're going to talk to Elaine about why pairing humor with the subject of mental health is so powerful. We'll also talk about the joy of podcasting and much more. So Elaine, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. That was such a sweet intro to me.
Well, we absolutely adore you. So before we get into, I guess, the bulk of everything, why don't you give us a little bit about your background and maybe when did your anxiety start?
Yeah, so I am someone who has always been anxious. I just haven't always known it. So when I was in third grade, I can actually recall that I had an immense fear of choking on my food. And I remember it was like taco night in my house, which never happened. And I was sobbing over hard shell tacos, which who doesn't still cry over tacos to this day? But I learned later on in life that that is actually one of the first signs that a child might have anxiety is that they're afraid of choking on their food. Oh, so wow. Yeah, I basically lived my whole life thinking I was just a worrier or that I just wasn't, you know, that great at like succeeding in life. So when I hit college, that's when it was the first time that I had a friend go, "Hey, do you think you're anxious?" And I was like, "No, you have to be like at a certain point." And I'm sure I'm not there. Lo and behold, I'm probably one of the most anxious people that ever existed before I started getting help. So that's kind of been my history with it. And once you get anxiety, that's kind of the, I'd like to say that that's kind of the easier one for people to digest because at some point in your life, you have felt stressed or you have felt anxiety. It is a natural human reaction to have. It's why we run away from bears and creepy men. So it's something that people can relate to more. Depression, on the other hand, is a little harder to explain and not as cute, I guess you could say. Yeah. You know, with anxiety, you're like, oh, take this bubble bath. Here's a face mask. And then depression, they're like, why do you have potato chip crumbs all over you? And it's a little harder to explain because people automatically think it's just, oh, you're sad. But there's a lot of physical symptoms that can come with it too. So when I was also diagnosed with depression in college, I was confused. I was like, but I'm upbeat. I'm really like happy. And I wasn't. It was just extreme denial because I was like, no, if I'm depressed though, that means I'm getting very othered. So college, again, it was a big turning point for me when I realized I did have mental health disorders. And so when I left college, I actually sought out a therapist. It's when I got on the right medication. And just ever since then, I've been working really hard on myself. And that's when I created my podcast to talk about it.
Excellent.
Yeah. So do you think that anxiety and depression often go hand in hand?
I think so. I think if you're anxious, there is this level of sadness that starts to creep in and kind of, you know, it's that sense of hopelessness where you don't understand why you're anxious and you can't just do things that other people can do. I know that for me personally, I would get very frustrated that I would freak out about ordering food. That's something that seems very simple. A lot of people, they're very excited to go out to a restaurant and order food. When my friends wanted to do it, I was at a level 8 anxiety, and it was, in my head, dumb because I was like, I just want a burger. Why can't I say that? So
right.
We have that kind of happening on a daily basis with tasks that seem simple. It's, you start to really beat yourself up. So I think that's when the depression can really start to creep in. And, you know, on the other hand, when you're depressed, I think there is the level of anxiety where you kind of feel trapped. You feel trapped in your own body. You feel like you can't leave bed. And then you get like anxious about the things that you aren't accomplishing. So I definitely think they go hand in hand a lot of the time.
Yeah, I can see that. That makes a lot of sense. So what divine breadcrumb led you to your first therapist and how did your life change after that?
Oh my gosh. So I have to say that it was probably either when that first friend brought up anxiety as an actual disorder, but I think probably what it actually was is I made myself study abroad. It was terrifying. I'd never been on an airplane. I traveled by myself internationally. And I am not exactly sure what urged me to do that. I just knew I had to do it to prove something to myself. And that whole trip had actually been the best experience of my life because I was able to let go of a lot of daily thoughts I had that were very anxious driven. So since I knew I had a limited amount of time in Ireland, that's where I studied abroad, I tried to make the best of it, which was something I couldn't do in my daily life. So when I came back, I realized that that mentality had really freed me and that I was probably more anxious than I thought. So it was that weird little in-between time of coming home, entering back into my old life and realizing that something was off. And then I think just having someone tell me, hey, you might be anxious, was enough for me to go seek out the help. And then that first therapy session set off the rest of my life. It was the first time I was told I was anxious and depressed. And the level of relief I had when I was told I had something, it's weird. You wouldn't think you'd be happy hearing you're anxious and depressed, but I was like, oh, thank God, I have an explanation for what's going on with me. So yeah, that's my divine breadcrumb. It's just getting to that first therapy appointment and having the course of my life change.
Yeah. Well, and you were so fortunate that you had a good experience with that first therapist. Sometimes it takes people a few different therapists to find the person that really helps them.
Definitely. I've definitely had a bad therapist. It was really funny. I saw her twice. She said, get a planner, that might help. And it did. It did, because I'm chaotic, right? So I did it. And I was like, hey, I got like 3 things done. And she's like, oh my gosh, you're cured.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm sorry, I'm cured? I pay you $90 a session to be cured by a planner. Okay, so I didn't see her after that. But yeah, I think if I had not had such a great therapist, and honestly, if the people around me hadn't understood mental health and that I needed help, that changed everything. That was, yeah, having that support really pushed me to go do something about it.
Yeah, no, that's so important. So you know, so now you get diagnosed and you decide to do a podcast, which, you know, people with anxiety, you don't normally think that somebody with anxiety is going to want to do a podcast. So I love that you're doing this. And I wanted to know, what's been the most rewarding thing to come from it?
Oh gosh. Well, I would say there's two that come to mind. The first is that it's very healing for me to talk about my experiences out loud and to get to hear people come back and say, hey, I actually experienced that too. A lot of us tend to live in our own bubble when we're anxious and depressed, and we think that nobody really gets what we're experiencing. So to have people remind me that they've also had the fear of ordering food, or yeah, they too have cried over tacos. It's really nice to have that feeling. And then probably the most rewarding has been people telling me that I have helped them, which it's weird. Like, I did a mental health podcast, but I didn't expect that reaction, probably because imposter syndrome. But that's been amazing because, yeah, I mean, I just talk about my life on here and it's hard to think of the greater impact you can actually have because it is just me alone in my room with a microphone. So to have actual human beings say, you're really helping me get through the workday and it's just great that I can laugh about this and, you know, kind of heal from it is the best part.
Right. And I think there's a big distinction between kind of laughing something off and using humor to help you heal.
Definitely. Laughing it off is kind of more of a denial of what you're experiencing. And for me, using humor, I really do think laughter is some of the best medicine. It just helps make it not feel so terrifying, you know, a comedic break essentially with a subject that can be really heavy or really clinical, I would say. So I try to still keep the realness in what I talk about. I don't just like, you know, giggle and do little like fart jokes over like, right, I feel sucky, you know, but right. But I think it's been nice to be able to just be like, yeah, you know what, this happens and it's part of our lives. And let me share you the silly thing I did. And being able to laugh back on it is healing because I get to recognize that it's okay. It happens. And now I can accept it.
Have you always been funny, or is this something that you sort of developed over time? When one of the things that we noticed when we first met you is, I mean, you had us cracking up all night.
Yeah, I think what happened is I do have a very funny family. My brother is hilarious, so, you know, I had to try to beat him. It raises the bar, sibling rivalry. I think I realized that that was my best way to communicate with people in high school. I just really like to make people laugh and it kind of became addicting. So that's my form of communication now, is just, I try to figure out what makes people giggle. And when I can't, that's when I really get socially clammed up and I have to go hide under a table because I don't know what else to say to them. So it's definitely something I curated over time because, again, as a very anxious, depressed person, this was the one thing that I could really like hold on to be able to connect with people and not feel like I was this weird alien kind of walking around.
Exactly. Now, do you feel like it's a lot of people around your age listening, or has it been kind of all over the map?
This is interesting. So I definitely have a lot of people around my age, kind of into even late high school. But I've also noticed I have a surgence of parents listening to my podcast. And when I asked one of my friends why she thought that might be, she said it's because parents can then listen to me and understand what their kid is feeling. And so I kind of have this weird bridge where the kid is listening to me and the parent. And it's a very weird but beautiful thing to be able to kind of connect that together. I forgot that it's really hard for, you know, you're as a kid to explain what's going on to your parent. And as a parent, it's very terrifying to not quite understand what's going on in your kid's mind. And especially now, I feel like mental health, we're talking about it more and more, but I know as a kid for me, it wasn't as widely spoken about. I know that my mom was just terrified and freaking out. So if she had had a source like this, it might've helped her be like, oh, you can still have a normal life and have a mental health disorder.
Right. And that's so true. I mean, and if you're saying when you were young, it wasn't talked about. I imagine when we were young. and I remember, you know, because you touched on a few things, and one of them was the ordering food. And I do remember that, you know, it was very rare that my mom would order out food. But if she did and said, okay, call to order the pizza, I mean, I was in such a panic. And I didn't understand why I was in a panic about that. But when my daughter was young, and my daughter's 28 now, same thing. She didn't want to order it. She would rather pay for the food than call to order it. And so just knowing that now there's this outlet, and like you said, parents can call in, people can listen to this and connect with you, and through your stories and your vulnerability and your humor, I just think it's a great thing.
And one of the observations I had is my mother actually suffered from severe anxiety through, well, all of my life, and sort of watching that, because I didn't really understand it, and I couldn't really grasp why things were hard for her. Things that seemed like they shouldn't be a big deal were such a big deal for her. And it wasn't until she actually was diagnosed with Alzheimer's and was fairly well progressed into Alzheimer's that the anxiety actually went away, which was sort of amazing to me. And although I wouldn't wish Alzheimer's on anyone, it was nice to see her living without that crippling anxiety.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely interesting, because when I equate it to when someone in your family has a mental health disorder, it's kind of a diagnosis for everyone. And I know for me, when you're anxious and you feel like you can't explain why something so small is so terrifying to you, you start to belittle yourself. And then a lot of times that comes out as anger. I was very angry growing up. And I didn't really know how to deal with that anger. So I would just kind of randomly snap at people. And it was a very irritable sort of way to live. So I really appreciate everybody that kind of stood by me during that time. And it's very difficult to help somebody who does have a mental health disorder and they're working through it kind of at the beginning stages. So I completely relate to that and understand the kind of the struggle of trying to figure out, like, you want to help, but you're not sure what's going on.
Right, exactly. So what would you like for people to know about living with anxiety?
Ooh, I think what I would want them to know is that it's not that your anxious friend doesn't want to do things with you or is mad with you. More times than not, they're really mad at themselves and they would want to do the experiences. I think a misconception is that if you're anxious, you're hiding and you're having fun when you stay at home. But I know for me, it's not, you know, when I get an invitation and I thought in my head, I cannot possibly go, I will be overwhelmed. When I stayed home, I wasn't having martinis and like a ball.
Right.
You know,
Right.
I was like really sad. I was like, I'm missing out on human experiences. And now everyone's going to think I don't care, or don't want to go. And, you know, a lot of those thoughts are actually distorted when we start thinking about them. But I think it would just be helpful to know that anxiety is real and it's not something that they want, but they also do not want to hurt you.
Oh yeah, that's so good to know. And, you know, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about PodFest, which is the big PodFest convention, which you just got back from. So something like that, where you know there's going to be a lot of people you don't know, you're going by yourself. How do you kind of prepare yourself for that?
So when I went to PodFest, I kind of went solo again. I knew that there would be some people I knew there, but I wasn't sure if I'd come across them. So just like She Podcasts, I was going to a conference by myself. So I knew from the get-go that I needed to have a little bit of mental arsenal on my side. So what I do to prepare for that is I make a list of reasons why I will be able to function. A lot of times I tend to overgeneralize. So I'll suddenly be like, oh, I'm awful at meeting people. I'm never good at this. But you even said so yourself at the beginning. You were like, oh, she was so confident when she came up to us.
And you
I was
were.
Like, oh, I was. So I had to remind myself that I do know how to interact with humans. And I kind of bring that list with me, and it's my go-to guide. So the second I start thinking of like, oh gosh, I'm going to the first meetup and no one's going to talk to me, I look at the list and it's like, oh no, I have proof that someone will talk to me. And if they don't, I will talk to them. And I basically have to try to keep reminding myself of realistic outcomes instead of just assuming the worst, which is something I am very talented at doing.
No, that's great. It's good for people to hear how you prepare. And, you know, we talked a lot about how you use humor to talk about anxiety. If you could pick, I know, I'm sure you have a gazillion funny stories. What's one of your favorite stories that kind of have to do with your anxiety?
Okay, so it's such a tiny one, but it just always gives me a good giggle. So it was my senior year, and we had this dining hall that had all glass doors, and I was heading over there to meet my friends, which was making me anxious already because I used to be really bad about meeting people up in places because what if they aren't there? What if I'm there alone? What do I do with my hands? You know, that fun thought spiral. So
right.
I'm feeling really confident. I'm finally doing it. I'm like walking towards the doors. I'm like, this is okay. There is a row of bikes, I would say about 8 or so.
Oh no.
Yeah. Oh, you know where this is going. So I'm like feeling, again, I still feel awkward. I describe it as walking around feeling like I'm the Michelin man. Like I'm just like this little weird, like wobbly tire buildup thing. So I have a Michelin man moment and my leg just kicks this bike and they all fall down. And I will remind you that the doors are glass and there's a huge line of people getting food.
Oh, no.
So everyone's staring at me at this point. And then I'm left with the moral decision. Do I just walk away or do I now struggle to right all of these bikes I just brought down? And my instinct was, I'll be a good person. Let me tell you how hard it is to bring up 8 bikes that are now all entangled within you. So I pull up, I try to start from the front of the line that goes so badly. I'm trying to lift them up. 2 more fall down. They're now falling on my legs and I am part of the tangled mess. I then go back to the end. I kind of upright them. They are not perfectly standing up now. I've like thrown them against the wall. And at this point I am at level 9 anxiety. I walk in the door and I go stand by my friend and I'm like, did you see that? And she's like, yeah,
we all
saw that. And I was like, okay. Okay. And then I got food and then I left.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I totally feel for you. And I don't know why I flashed to this, but I flashed to that episode of SNL when Ashley Simpson was on and got caught lip syncing. And she started doing that little jig like, okay, I'm caught. So I'm just going to do this little jig.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And it's so funny because if that happened to me now, that's where that humor comes in again. I could just laugh at myself and be like, okay, well, this is funny. And then people tend to react better too. This is an interesting thing I've learned. If you feel confident enough in yourself, people won't doubt you. So because I was so distraught and felt very already weird, people picked up on it. And that's why they kind of stared at me and were like, this is uncomfortable to witness.
Right.
So, you know, if I had been able to laugh at, you know, like laugh at the situation, like this is really funny, kind of like we're laughing at it now, I think it wouldn't have been so disastrous in my mind and clearly seared in my memories.
Mm. Yes. Well, thank you for sharing that. And yes, we're not laughing at you. We're laughing with you because that is something that I would do. And that's why probably I'm laughing even harder.
Do you find that as you get older, it gets easier, or are there just different types of challenges?
I think it's a mixture of both. I think it definitely gets easier because you start to know more how to function. And I think that only works if you are trying to work on yourself, if you have a therapist, because if you don't get the help, then you're going to maintain those old habits and those old ways of thinking. And that can actually get worse over time because it starts to be built up. It's kind of like how it's harder to learn a new language as you get older. Our brains just don't function that way anymore. So because I have been working on this since college now, and it's been about 5-6 years, I do feel like it's getting better and I know how to better react to things. So I'll still get anxious. I'll still have panic attacks, but I have limited the amount of things that can make those happen. And I know how to better deal with the actual anxiety when it does occur. So it definitely gets better, but there are new anxieties that pop up that you just don't know are a thing. So when I first had to get my car's oil changed, I do not like the mechanic. I feel very out of my realm. I don't know what they're doing. They could be throwing wrenches in there and I would have no idea and pay the money and run. So, you know, new things like that. I'm sure whenever I go to buy a house at some point, that's just going to be something. so yeah, there's definitely new things, but you get that muscle gets stronger on how to deal and cope with your anxieties. And even though there are new things that'll head your way and they might be a little shaky at first, I do truly believe that it can get better if you do actively work on it and you're aware of it.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
So what's up next for you? Well, obviously you're going to continue the podcast. What else is in your pipeline, so to speak?
Oh man. Well, I really want to, I have a ton of ideas after PodFest. So I want to try some fun new episode ideas. And then I'm actually personally, so I enjoy doing comedy writing and I like to do personal essays, sort of like how David Sedaris does. And I'm working on a collection of essays about being an anxious child and I'm having so much fun going through it. And again, it's really fun. I think it'll be fun to read, but it's also just very therapeutic for me to get it out. And to, again, kind of look back on my childhood and instead of being like, oh, well, that was a sham, you know, or like, what a waste that was. I can be like, oh, man, I feel sorry for you, but I appreciate who you were and how you made me who I am today. So I hope that it would relate to people, but they would also, you know, maybe in themselves start to forgive their past selves because it's really easy to hold regret against yourself. So that's probably the biggest thing that I'm trying to make myself happen. So I'm saying it to you so that everyone in the world can nag me to actually do this because
yes,
I wanted
now,
to do it for
now
years.
We're holding you accountable.
Yes.
Well, I can't
yes.
wait for it to come out. Well, even when you mentioned David Sedaris, he's one of my favorites. So I'm very
oh, yes.
excited for this.
That's great. And yeah, we'll have to have you back to talk about it once it's out.
Exactly.
So now you're committed.
Aha. Okay. Aha. I love deadlines. I thrive. You know, like, I like, it's like people are like, oh, you work well under pressure. I'm like, I work well under anxiety and pressure. So let's do this.
I remember when I was, I don't know if it was between high school and college or after college, I was doing a resume and I was asking my mother for help. And she said, well, put down that you work well under pressure. You work very well under pressure. I'm like, I only work under pressure.
Yeah. Right.
If there's
right,
no pressure, right. why am I going to do anything?
Right. Gosh, that reminds me of, it always stresses me out when I went into like job interviews and they were like, so how do you work? Like, do you work well with stress? And I was thinking about it. I was like, well, I'm an anxious person, so the answer is probably no. But yeah, when it comes to job interviews, just go ahead and lie. And then
yeah.
And just know that it, like, I think it's very compartmentalized. So it's like, yeah, if you live with anxiety, you're clearly dealing with it to some extent. So, but that always cracked me up about this. I was like, do you work well with stress? I'm like, does anybody really work well with stress? I think we just push through it. I don't know what
exactly.
you're hoping from that.
So true.
Well, Elaine, as James Lipton would say, you've been a delight.
Well, thank you. I've had so much fun being here.
Seriously, we have been wanting to have you on for a while, and we're just so glad you were able to do this, especially after coming off PodFest. We know you're tired, and you know, it's hard to find the time, and we appreciate you spending it with us and sharing your stories. I mean, as funny as they are, they're also vulnerable, and they're really helping people.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it's such an important topic. And, you know, I know that it does get more and more attention in the media and the press and in, you know, podcasts and things like that. But people we need to keep talking about these things, you know, and sort of get over that stigma that's around all of this, because it's common and it's important.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Thank you for helping me share my story.
Oh, our pleasure. So everybody, thank you so much for joining us and for listening. As always, you can catch the show on our website, thedivinebreadcrumb.com, Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. If there's something that you want to hear more of, just drop us a quick note, email, let us know what you're thinking. We love hearing from you. Elaine, thanks again so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Carol, any last thoughts?
No, just thanks everybody for listening. We appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.